Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast that's available at thehollywoodoutsider.com as well as your favorite podcast app. You can find hundreds of hours of other podcast content where we discuss a myriad of topics and review a lot of films over the course of our history. Please be sure to check those out if you're new to this show. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As many of our listeners know, on occasion we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers just to give you an insight into what goes into getting their projects made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. And this time, director Matt Ascandari, who has actually been on our show once before for a really fun thriller called 12 Feet Deep, he returns to the podcast to discuss his new Bruce Willis and Chad Michael Murray thriller, Survive the Night. Now, if you want to know what Survive the Night is about, it's about Rich. He's played by Chad Michael Murray, who, along with his wife and daughter, is forced to share a roof with his parents, Frank and Rachel. That's Bruce Willis and Jessica Abrams. After Dr. Rich botches an operation, Rich takes up a job as a local veterinarian to help make ends meet and dig his family out of the hole. It is here that criminals Matthias and Jamie, played by Tyler John Olsen and Shea Buckner, lay eyes on Rich, as they need a doctor to repair a bullet wound in the leg, which Matthias suffers after his hot-headed brother Jamie causes a ruckus during what should have been a pretty routine convenience store stop. Matthias and Jamie sees Frank's home, and immediately the situation goes awry. Jamie's impulsive, and the further Matthias fades into the black, the more unstable and reckless Jamie becomes. So Frank and Rich, father and son, are forced to put their differences aside and come together in order to save their family and, you guessed it, survive the night. You can read my full review on the movie at the site, but in the meantime, to talk about the movie Survive the Night is director Matt Ascandari. Well, Matt called us from the isolation of LA to discuss making his film, working in the age of the corona, and casting Chad Michael Murray, and of course, working with Bruce frickin' Willis, the legend, the icon, and apparently Matt didn't know Bruno. We'll get there. You'll hear it. If you guys enjoyed this interview, please share it on your social media outlets with the hashtag Survive the Night. Without further ado, here is my interview with Matt Ascandari, the director of Survive the Night, which is available on demand and all streaming platforms right now. Matt, welcome back to The Hollywood Outsider. Thank you so much for coming back to the show.
It's a pleasure, man. Great to be back and great to talk to you again.
And we were briefly talking about this, but you are in LA right now, right? And you've been there since the whole predicament started.
Yeah, it's definitely been an unprecedented time right now, dealing with this whole pandemic, along with, trying to finish a movie, post-production on it, and then trying to set up, the next projects and everything. I mean, obviously, career-wise, it's definitely thrown a lot of people into a spin. You know, health is the most important thing to those, so I'm just glad it seems like it's people are able to recover well from it. So Absolutely. That's all I'm worried about is, like, the health and safety.
Was it this movie that you were finishing, or was it a different movie?
No, it was actually a different film. It's another film that I shot with Jesse Metcalf. It was an action movie, more of like an action heist movie. That one, we lucked out because we finished production in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as we finished, we flew back, like we just wrapped. Everything went like people were saying, oh, there's this whole thing going on with COVID-19. And I'm like, what? Like, I was totally out of the loop. And then, next thing you know, they're like, oh, we're going to national emergency. We're going to shut down the whole country. I was like, wait, what? Where am I? Like, where did this come from?
Why didn't you write this screenplay? You could have been prepared.
Yeah, exactly. I was totally unprepared. But it's been an interesting time for sure.
Man, that it's crazy how things have gone. Any idea how they're going to, you think it's going to change filming going forward for you? I mean, I'm sure it's probably very difficult for directors in your position because you're, like you talk about careers, you're an up-and-coming director. You know, you're building your filmography, you're building your name, your reputation, everything else. So I know it's probably obviously bad for the world, but also it's not a great time for your career when you're clicking, everything's firing. So it kind of puts you on pause. Is that going to change anything for you as a director going forward?
Definitely. I mean, I've already noticed projects like they're like, oh, how can we shoot this? Minimal social distancing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to shoot movies with social distancing and all this other mumbo jumbo. And you know what I mean? I'm just like, let's just shoot a movie, man. I don't want to have to deal with all this other stuff. So it's definitely creatively going to affect the projects that can be made. And it's definitely have that to sort of long-term impact. mm-hmm. until like the vaccine or whatever, you know, until something, until there's like a treatment where people, cause like, you know, on a film set, you're all over each other. You know what I mean? I mean, people are just constantly in large groups or people are just constantly talking and around each other. So it's definitely going to require a lot of finessing and figuring out solutions, and hopefully we'll come to a good kind of consensus on how you can actually move forward creatively and make the kind of films you want to make. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's definitely been tricky.
I keep joking with my co-host that we might not have kissing in movies anymore. I don't know, at least for the time being, people are just going to blow kisses when romantic comedies.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is, like, I feel like if you can do quick testing on people, why can't you have them do things like on camera? I don't understand. I mean, if two people don't have any, they're testing negative, why would that change what you can shoot? You know what I mean? So that's the only thing. I don't understand the whole process yet. I haven't made a movie with these conditions. I know some people are already starting to. There's a lot of people that are like gung-ho to get started, and they're, you know, starting to set out guidelines and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So hopefully by the time I do get to shoot the next movie, all this will be sorted out. We'll know like, okay, these are the best practices to follow. So, yeah.
Well, we'll use that as a segue, because your leading man seems to be having a lot of family fun in quarantine. Cause I keep seeing Bruce Willis pop up on his daughter's Instagram and whatnot.
Yeah. I've heard he's enjoying himself, which is cool, but it seems like that's just Bruce. He's always like a jokester, and he's always like that. Even on set, he's always like busting people's balls and joking around, and that's just his personality. Like, he's just like that. So it's cool.
Well, we'll definitely come back to Bruce Willis. You can't talk about this movie and not talk about Bruce. And he's going to be in your open source too, right? With Jesse Metcalf. So he's in your next movie, the movie you were just cutting.
Yeah, this is what I call the Bruce Eskandari trilogy is what I've called it now.
That's but, great.
No, it's been fun, man. It's been great to work with someone of that caliber.
It's pretty fantastic. He's a guy, I mean, I honestly have been a fan with most of my life. You know, since I was a teen, Moonlighting came out. It's amazing to see, you know, not many actors are still having careers like that 30 years later.
Yeah, it's insane. So, and then sometimes I don't want to look at his filmography before we shoot a movie, because I'm just like, he's worked with like every major, like freaking Tarantino, Michael Bay. I mean, just like a who's who of like the best directors in Hollywood. So I'm just like, I don't know, man, I don't want to be intimidate myself by looking back at his filmography again. Cause then I'm like on set, I don't want to be like, how am I giving this guy an adjustment when he's, you know, he's looking freaking all these A-list directors. So I try to just be like, just go at him as like a friend and just another actor that is helping me tell the story is how I look at it.
Okay. So when we last talked, you had just released 12 Feet Deep, which is about two young women that were trapped in a pool, and it was a concept that honestly shouldn't work, but completely does. Now you're tackling a home invasion thriller of sorts. So what is it with you and people being trapped? Is that your thing? Is that your thing?
It's honestly, I think it just comes down to thrillers, and contained thrillers are just like a lot easier to get financed and made these days with the budgets that exist. So, you know, unless you're doing a $100 million Marvel movie, you're either doing a $100 million Marvel movie, you're doing a $15 million movie with majors like Christian Bale and, you know, some like A-list directors and all this other stuff, or you're stuck in the sort of like thrillers where you're trying to pull off whatever you can. Like, even the Blumhouse model is very similar. It's like $5 million, very limited sets and whatnot. And it's just, that's just the model of filmmaking that exists right now to get financing. So that's part of it. But at the same time, I do like the contained quality, because it lends itself to more tension, more suspense, and a more like streamlined story, right? I mean, you can't fall back on just the production value of different locations. You're just sort of, you know, you have to use what you have to expand upon the tension and suspense and the characters as much as you can. So it's definitely been, you know, part of the journey to get better and better at these sort of films.
And what I found fascinating is the last film you had a large part in writing, and here you're going off someone else's script. Does that change how you approach the material as a director? Because, and I realize you're going to film it the best way possible, but in terms of you have a lot of the vision came right out of your head, and here you're adapting someone else's vision. How does that change how you approach it? If that question
it definitely
sense.
Changes it. I mean, for instance, when you're doing something that you write, you already have sort of a hook into the story that appeals to you as to why you're telling this story. You know what I mean? Like for 12 Feet Deep, it was that sister bond, that relationship, dealing with monsters, the allegory of the monster. They're trapped inside this belly of the whale. That kind of stuff fascinated me. And I was like, that was my hook into the story. And I was like, that's the kind of stuff that interests me. So when you read somebody else's script, you have to find that element in the story that really fascinates you. Mm-hmm. So for this one, it was, you know, if it would have been a different director, they might have approached it differently. But for me, I looked at it and I was like, wow, these two villains or these two antagonists, I love their relationship. You know what I mean? It's like a home invasion thriller. And we're bringing up an interesting dilemma here where you have this father and son and his family, and then you have these two brothers, also a family, and they're both sides are willing to go as far as they need to survive or to get what they want. So it's definitely, that was what hooked me in. I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of a cool hook in terms of how do you make an audience empathize or sympathize or understand with both sides, even though one side is clearly the bad guys. They're clearly the ones that are doing dastardly things.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty clear who's the bad guy, who's the good guy. But at the same time, it was like, okay, well, that to me is kind of a ballsy narrative choice. So how can I expand on that? How can I, you know, tap into that element of the narrative to really give something different, give my version of a home invasion thriller where it's not just faceless goons? Because usually, you know, almost all, a lot of home invasion thrillers are the same thing. It's like these faceless goons or these scary guys breaking in. You know, obviously Panic Room, Fincher did an awesome job with that. Mm-hmm. Because you sort of relate to the Forrest Whitaker character. So it was sort of the same thing where I was like, okay, how do I make you sort of at least understand somewhat the tragedy of this story? It's like, you know, it's just this brother wants to save his brother. You know what I mean? Yeah, if he wasn't this morally ambiguous character, he probably would have just found a way to get help. But he can't because he's flawed. He's got this fucked up personality, and he's not that type of person. So it's interesting to me. That all that stuff to me is just like fascinating. It's interesting. And I know it'll make some people uncomfortable when they watch it, because as a director, you're intentionally making the decision to, you know, to show somebody who might not be as relatable, somewhat sympathetic, or trying to show that side. So that to me is just, it's interesting, it's fascinating, it's cool. So that was my sort of through line into wanting to direct the script.
Yeah, and I like how Shea Buckner played it, because he's a very fun villain, but he's also sadistic. And he's got the sappy side. So, you know, at times you're like, well, he's not so bad. And then he does something and you're like, well, no, he's pretty bad, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love Shay. He's, you know, one of my favorite actors. It's not my favorite actor I've worked with, just because sometimes you work with an actor and they make a lot of boring or safe choices. With Shay, it's funny. Like, I told myself that I want to work with an actor who's as obsessed with the story and the character as I am when I start a movie. And that's never really happened to me before, but first time I worked with Shay, I've never seen an actor literally obsessed with the character. Mm-hmm. So like, this is intense, man. I fucking love it. You know what I mean? So it was a great experience, and it was tricky, right? It's like, how do we make this person, you know, add some layers, add some nuance. And I think it's interesting to see how he added like a mask to the character, where when he's dealing with the family, he's like this bloodthirsty, or he's like completely unhinged. And then when he has these conversations with his brother, but even when he has conversations with his brother, you can see there's moments where he, you know, he's sort of crossing the line, or he's doing things that are just like, dude, calm down, man. You know, at the gas station, he sort of has like I don't know how to describe it, but his frontal lobe is sort of,
He's compulsive, you know, is what I would say.
Yeah, he's so impulsive.
Impulsive, that's the better word, yeah.
Impulsive, yeah. He's, like, so impulsive all the time. And his brother is, like, completely different, which is an interesting kind of back and forth. And literally, his brother never kills anyone in the whole movie. I mean, his brother is just like, we're not here to hurt anybody. Please just get this over with. We'll leave. But, of course, the story doesn't unfold that way.
No, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there were at least two moments where I went, oh, shit, because I didn't expect it to go the way that it went. And that doesn't happen very often when you watch as many movies as I do. So that's always a pleasant surprise.
Totally.
Chad Michael Murray, speaking of the casting, I honestly am not a big One Tree Hill follower. I didn't really know the show very well. I mean, I know of it, obviously, but I know a ton of people who absolutely love that show and love his character. And based on what they've told me, this seems very much against type for him. And I know he's a long way from that, but unfortunately, you know how actors get pigeonholed and whatnot.
Right.
What made him a good fit? And he is a good fit. I enjoyed him in the film. What made him a good fit?
Yeah, I feel like I've never seen One Tree Hill, mm-hmm. so I can't say if the character is different from something he usually plays. But I did get a sense that he was like diving in 100% into the role. And it was something that fascinated him. And he really loved the father and son relationship and the fact that, he tapped into that. And he spoke a little bit to me about how he related to that and how his father was sort of like judgmental and that sort of father son relationship, developing it and creating it and making it feel real, especially getting a chance to work with Bruce, I think was a huge opportunity. And he really was excited about that.
I'm sure. And
I think he really brought another element to it. He helped elevate it because there was elements in the script where I was like, oh man, how are we going to make this believable? Or, there were times in the script where the father came off kind of like a pussy. Like he wasn't very assertive and you're just like, oh, like if the father in the script is a pussy and his family is being attacked by these guys, you're going to be, as an audience, lose interest because you're going to be like, why should I be rooting for this guy? He needs to fight for his family. You know what I mean? I don't care if he's just a doctor. Mm-hmm. He needs to do whatever he can. And there were scenes where Shay's character was like berating him and I was like, oh man. So I was like, we need to make sure that, the father is still able to stand up and slowly visually become his father. So it was interesting that it was one cool idea Chad had was he was like, well, what if I start off wearing like some kind of outfit, and then when I go to the barn, I put on this other thing. So I feel like this not a blazer, but it was a flannel kind of thing, mm-hmm. which is what the father was wearing at the beginning of the movie. So like he's metaphorically, becoming more like the father. So it was like there were some interesting elements that helped elevate it, and he made it so that, granted, he was in the father's in a bad situation. At least you're like, okay, he's standing up to Shay and to, Jamie and Matthias and the two brothers, and he's doing whatever he can. He doesn't want to put his family at risk, but at least he's trying the best he can to fight back against them.
Yeah, he is. And I love when, even if I didn't know the property that well, I mean, it's been a decade since that show went off the air or whatever. But when I hear other people tell me that they loved him in something and that sounds like against type for him, I get really excited about that for actors because I know that they can get, by casting standards, get pigeonholed in a certain kind of character. So whenever they do anything, I'm like, hey, I want to do something different. I don't want to be that guy forever. I just like rooting for them because that's hard to do as an actor, to spend your whole career playing, one kind of role. And the fact that he is trying something different, I think is great. I mean, now he's the father of, I guess, the character he would have been back then.
That's true. Yeah. No, thinking about it, he's usually playing the son, like the younger kind of guy, and now he's a father with a family, and he does have a family too. It's like he brought his family to set every day, and I mean he's like a family man, so it's interesting to see him relate. And I remember one scene he had like a tear coming out of his eye in one of the takes. I was like, that was powerful, man. And he's like, yeah, I was thinking about my son, and I was like, oh, that was cool. Like he made it feel real for himself, and I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I do like the escalation of the character, or the evolution, I guess, of the character, because of, he does kind of start as a pansy and, yeah. Or at least from our perception, because we don't know really what he went through, but as he grows, there's a definite moment in the movie where he kind of gets an upper hand, and I won't spoil it. I'll talk to you off air if you want, but yeah. Where he kind of gets an upper hand. And I think if he were his father, he would beat this guy into the ground, but he's not his father. So he can't, it's not in him to be that guy.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, that was great.
I like that. I like that a lot. So the big kahuna, one of my favorite actors of all time, David Addison, way before John McClane, in my opinion. I'll always prefer David Addison over John McClane, but they're both great. Was it daunting to know you would be directing an icon? And by the way, I had his albums. I had them, and I enjoyed them.
Oh, wow. Wait, Bruce has albums? I didn't know that.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Yeah. Bruno. Yes. Yes.
Oh, dude.
I would listen to them constantly. I had them on cassette because I was a teenager. I didn't really have much. They didn't have CDs back then, Matt. And, yeah, Bruce Willis had some albums, and he was a really good singer.
Wait, was it like harmonica, jazz kind of stuff? Or
bluesy. Blues or very bluesy, but it was catchy, and he's got that cool, fun singing tone. He was really good at it. Like, really good at
it. Oh, wow. I wish I wrote that into the script.
Where he just starts singing.
But, yeah, no, I mean, working with Bruce, this is actually the second time I got to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
The first time was in Trauma Center, which was like a learning experience, because the way these movies are made is they're shot like 12 or 10 days. The whole movie is shot in 12 or 10 days, multiple cameras. It's almost like an episode of network TV where they shoot like 70 pages in like 8 days or something. I mean, it's pretty insane how much we get done in 10, 12 days. And Bruce shows up for 2 days, and he has to be in 25 minutes. So you got 25 pages to shoot in 2 days with Bruce, and it's challenging because he's in a lot of locations, or so the first film, Trauma Center, it was like a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, like, first of all, like, why are we giving him a script where his character is giving these boring like expositional monologues, or these things like scenes without stakes, really, without any emotional stakes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is fucking Bruce Willis, man. This is an icon, man. Like 100 years from now, people are going to look like they're going to look at his filmography, and they're going to, want to see like what movies are pretty good and okay. And, like, he's actually someone who people are going to look back on. So let's give him like an interesting character. You know what I mean? I mean, even though, yeah, we only get him for 20 minutes in the movie, but let's try to maximize the hell out of those. You know what I mean? And like, and I noticed he likes doing action, obviously, because he's an action star. Like, he loves doing action, but he also really likes doing more like intimate character stuff, where it's just him sitting down, talking to another person, and they're having like, this conversation. So he loves doing that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, why don't we just write most of the movie where he's playing Bruce, but also we give him some meat. You know what I mean? He has to emote and go through some like character arc, and so I went back, and the script, which was originally called The Long Night, I was like, okay, now that I've worked with Bruce, I know what he likes doing, and what his strengths are, and let me rewrite and what I can accomplish in 2 days. Like, basically, like, you get 16 hours. I mean, what are you gonna, like, don't get too ambitious and try to shoot too many random scenes of Bruce if it's pointless. Just maximize the best you can. So I went back in there and made sure that there was like a clear arc for his character. He has these like quiet moments. You get to see different sides to him, his relationship with his son, his relationship with his wife, after his wife, after everything that happens. I don't want to spoil it, but like, he's got to deal with that trauma and that pain. And at the same time, he has to kind of accept the fact that his son is who he is, and sort of like hand the reins off to him and come full circle. So there's a lot more there. And it was interesting, the moment Bruce showed up on set for this movie, I could tell there was like a difference in the way he was like, oh, the script is really good, man. I was like, whoa, shit. Oh, thanks, Bruce. Like, whoa. He's like, he already was like throwing out ideas. He's like, what if I'm like this alcoholic and this, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. So I love that, Bruce. So he was just like throwing ideas out there. He's like, what if I have this Southern accent? And I was like, I don't know about that. I don't know if we're going to be able to pull that.
Oh, you get that wrong. Like, that's going to backfire.
Yeah, that's good, because it just because we don't get enough takes to like finesse stuff. So like, right. let's just stick to what it is. But right away, like the first scene we shot was him and Chad. It was like that first scene together, and he just like turned it on. And I was like, whoa, man, this is amazing, man. Like Bruce is on, man. I love it. So it was like a totally different experience, because like the guy has done so many movies, mm-hmm. literally. Any genre you can imagine, he's done it, right? So it's like, if you're going to give him a script and a story, give him something interesting. The dude is an artist. He wants to do interesting work. And there's only so much you can do in 2 days. And, you know, I think we maximize it. Like, I dare anybody to find a movie with Bruce shot in 2 days with as much footage as we shot of him, with like a real art to it. You know what I mean? And he cries in a scene. You know what I mean? I'm like, find me a movie like in his repertoire in the last, you know, 10 years that he's done something like this. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, obviously M. Night movies are a totally different thing, but M. Night has him for like 2 weeks. You know what I mean? It's totally different.
Right.
You know, they're shooting a page a day with Bruce. You know what I mean? They're not shooting 20 pages a day. So it's a different ball game. But yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. I mean, you know, Bruce is, he's an interesting actor in that, Like Shay, like makes interesting choices. Bruce is the same way. He's unpredictable. When he's really like in the moment, he just does things that are sometimes are like little things. He'll just like, there's a moment in the movie later on when he's outside in the woods and he's running away from the bad guys. And in the script, it's just, okay, Bruce, you fall against this tree, you look back, and then you get up and you take off. And I'm like, okay, like it's a pretty simple 2 seconds in the movie. And then when I call action, he just does something completely different. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, he gets up and he screams as loud as he can, and then he collapses, and then he whispers his wife's name, and then he just like takes off. And I was like, what the fuck was that?
What just happened?
Like I was like laughing about in the moment. I was like, whoa, that was kind of crazy. I mean, I was like, that would never make the movie or whatever. But then, you know, my editor looks at the footage. He's like, dude, that was genius, man. Like, Bruce captured the pain and everything. I was like, holy shit, I just realized that's like a perfect, yeah, man. What the hell was that? Like, that was genius, man. That was like a genius choice to just do something random and like elevate the moment. You know what I mean? And he does that with little things all the time. Like, there'll be a scene where he has to get up and warn his son about something. And instead of just like getting up a certain way, he'll get up and like, push stuff aside or like throw something. And you know, I remember I was like, whoa. You know what I mean? Like, he's just unpredictable. And that's the one thing, is if you look at all great, really great, great actors, what makes them great is like Daniel Day-Lewis, all these like genius actors, they make unpredictable choices that make them stand out from the boring actors, the boring people that safe choices. Like, oh, this is the scene where I get to cry. Okay, I'm just going to cry here. You know what I mean? Like, finding an artist or an actor does something completely different, which is sometimes wrong, right? Sometimes it's like, what the fuck? Like, that was totally wrong. But like, when you get to those level of caliber of actors, you realize like, okay, now I know why these actors are A-list actors, because they're just unpredictable. They do things differently. You know what I mean? They just have sort of an intuition or an instinct, and they like elevate scenes and just do things in different ways. You know what I mean? And it's just like, oh, it's cool.
Absolutely. And what's funny about him is when you say icon, I say icon. He literally is an icon. I mean, it's an overused term, I think, today, but he's been around since the 80s, and he's been successful in every decade since then. That's hard to, I mean, there aren't many that can claim that. You might have like a Harrison Ford here and there, but the majority of actors cannot claim that. And Bruce Willis can. That's a feat. That's a true accomplishment for an actor.
Totally. Yeah, no, it's definitely, it shows the longevity of, you know, his career. He's just done so much. It boggles my mind when I look at his filmography. I'm just like, crazy.
Yeah. My mom still swears that I smirk. I don't really smile. And she blames Bruce Willis for that. Nice. But I do want to ask, okay, because he has this almost mythology behind him where it's hard to know what is true and what is just bitterness for his success. How was it? You kind of talked about it. How was it for you to direct Bruce Willis? Was it difficult, or was he? No, it was a great experience for you.
No, I mean, it was, for me, it was a great experience. I mean, I could see that, like, my first time on set with them, I could tell that if you didn't exactly clearly have a vision, and if you were, if you pussyfooted around anything, or if you weren't, like, really firm on what you wanted, or if you, you know what I mean? Like, I could see other directors having issues, because once you get to a certain caliber of an actor, man, you don't, you're getting paid. Don't waste his time, or don't waste her time. You know what I mean?
They know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've heard stories like Kevin Smith. He's like, he did an experience working on Bruce. And I'm just, well, maybe it was you, Kevin. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, maybe you just didn't know what the hell you wanted. And, you know, cause like some directors have this style where they just, they let actors kind of do what they want, or they don't give like clear direction or something. And when you're dealing with somebody on Bruce's caliber, he's worked with fucking, you name it, man, like biggest directors in Hollywood who know exactly what they want, like Michael Bay and, you know, M. Night. Like, M. Night knows exactly where Bruce is, like how to say every little beat and his clothes and his costume. And so I watched some of the behind the scenes stuff of other directors working with Bruce. And I was, it was interesting watching Bruce talk about like M. Night and his relationship. And he's like, yeah, Night would tell me, like, M. Night, man, he would tell him exactly what he wanted. So Bruce trusted his vision. You know what I mean? Like, he put his, put himself into Knight's hands. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'm not going to get to work with Bruce for, you know, 2 months like Knight, but at least, you know, I'll get, you know, a couple of days, and I'll, you know, I want to make sure that those couple of days Bruce is like, okay, this kid knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, he knows what he wants. So that was the whole, that was the whole impetus. And it's not just Bruce. I mean, like I said, a lot of A-list actors, they're going to, you know, unless you go in there knowing exactly what you want, how you want it, it's not going to be a pleasant experience, because they're going to resist. And then when an actor loses faith or loses trust in the director, it's challenging. And I've had that happen on other movies before in my career, younger times and stuff. And it's like a learning lesson. You're like, okay, this is something you can take with you.
You know what? That makes total sense to me. A guy that's been as successful and has as long a career as him, I wouldn't want to show up and somebody didn't know what they wanted. I'm not saying that that pertains to the Kevin Smith situation or anybody else, but I wouldn't want that. That would be aggravating. I don't like doing it now. You know, you're doing what I do. If I'm talking to somebody, and your time is valuable, you know, it's valuable, especially the older you get.
Right. Exactly. And it comes down to the nitty gritty. Like, Bruce is like, okay, you do a take. Okay, you want to do another one? Well, why? Like, what are we going to change in this take? If it's like, let's just do another one. Okay, well, you know, he knows that his time is valuable. So, okay, let's do another one. What if, you know, there was some different intention behind this line? Or let me try this. You know, you have to know exactly why you want another take. And sometimes directors are just like, even if it's like, okay, let's do one more for fun. You know what I mean? Like, let's just do one more take for fun. You know, we're just going to have some fun on this one. Just, you have to give a reason, because otherwise the actor's going to be like, okay, well, why are we getting another take, man? Like, you know, they know that you only have them for a certain amount of time. So they're like, okay, well, if you only have me for 2 days and you're shooting 30 pages, why are we shooting 5 takes of this? You know what I mean? So you have to have a clear reason for why you're doing what you're doing.
I'm glad to hear that. He is a dream interview of mine, and that just makes me feel good to hear that.
I don't know if you'll ever get to interview
Probably not. I've heard, I don't think a lowly podcast is going to hop on. He doesn't even like to do Letterman very much when that was on. So, I mean.
Something happened in like the 2000s, I heard, where they asked him some questions. I don't know the exact story, but basically he like will not do, even for like Night and stuff. I heard it's challenging, man, to do like press for stuff. But
you know, yeah, what? If you have a long enough career and you get tired of the press painting you any particular way, I would probably pass. I get it.
Yeah, no, definitely. If you, man, it's like, it's hard for us to put ourselves in his shoes or in anybody's shoes that has done that much work. But can you imagine doing the same press interviews and stuff for 30 years? They're all the same. They're all the same interview, the same questions. Especially like the celebrity ones where they interview like celebrities and stars. It's all the same stupid questions. They don't ask any thoughtful questions. You know what I mean? It's always dumb gossipy stuff. You know what I mean? All dumb gossipy questions. And
gotcha interviews.
Yeah, gotcha interviews. And they're like, oh, we caught them saying this. You know what I mean? okay, yeah, you got your little clickbait headline now, but now you're not going to get to interview this guy, this person anymore, because, you know, you twisted his words. So yeah, definitely can see why.
Well, I'm glad you had a great relationship, and I'm glad the movie came out fun. I mean, I really like movies like this. There's a couple different turns that it took that I didn't expect, and that's always fun. And one question I kind of want to ask you, when you're making a movie that has a familiar concept as a filmmaker, do you try to stay conscious of the cliches of those films? I mean, is it always something where you're looking at like, what? That's always done. I don't want to do it, or I want to do it a little bit different way. Or is it, you know, just sometimes you just have to accept them because it's necessary for those kinds of films?
I think there's definitely that back and forth where, you know, you want to be like, okay, these are done. Like, if you're doing an action movie, like, oh, this sort of a scene has been done so many times before. How do we add our own spin to it? Or how do we make it, you know, different? But other times you're like, there's a reason why these things are done. And there's a reason why this sort of scene exists in this sort of movie. If it's a heist movie, you always want to have that scene where the people are standing around the map or whatever, and they're figuring out, okay, this is the plan, because otherwise the audience doesn't know what's happening, and there's no tension, there's no suspense. Because when you do start having things not go the way that they expect, they have to know what they were supposed to expect. So even for this, yeah, there was like, you know, with this one, I felt like just the fact that the villains weren't one dimensional, that they were already like, we were already doing something different with how we were creating the villains as characters as well, and trying to make them sympathetic. I was already like, okay, I'm already pushing the genre a little bit here. I don't want to do anything else crazy. You know what I mean? Like, we're already doing something a little off kilter here, and hopefully some people will be able to, you know, get off of their, safeness and try to look at it from a different angle. But it's definitely a conversation that you have, you know, when you're shooting and when you're coming to that, and you know, when you're trying to make those creative choices of how do we break cliches? Why do certain cliches exist? And just doing your best to subvert the audience's expectations, but not go so far that it doesn't work for whatever reason.
And so what's next for you?
Open Source, where you shot, and that one is in post-production. Probably change the title on, I don't know yet, but we're in post on that. And then, I don't know, nothing else yet. Obviously, the whole pandemic, I was supposed to be shooting a movie over the summer, and that all kind of got thrown into chaos. Things are sort of, you know, in flux at this point. I mean, I want to be careful about whatever my next film is. I just, like, I want to try something different. Maybe, you know, like, after doing, this would be the Open Source would probably be my third sort of, like, action thriller. Mm-hmm. Love to try something different, you know what I mean? Either like a more of a drama, or if it is going to be an action movie, like a bigger level action movie with some, you know, some bigger toys to play with and whatnot. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, if you'd asked me when we did 12 Feet Deep, remember that interview? If you're like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, do you think you'll be working with Bruce? Or I would have been like, oh, hell no. Like, I probably would never get to work with like Bruce Willis. Like, why are you, like, if you'd asked me that at that point in my career, I would have said I have no idea, you know. And then now, looking back a year or 2 years from now, I have no, like, who knows what movie I'll have made. I mean, it's interesting how your career just goes on its own journey and you just like go along with it. So.
I'm so happy for you, man. I think it's awesome what you've brother. Done. You gotta be proud of that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the support. And you know, it's great to see you guys. I feel like you guys are really blowing up. I've been following your Facebook. It's great to see you guys getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We need more sort of like independent voices in the press with media. So I feel like all this Hollywood media, they all have the same slant to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get political, but it's all the same thing again and again. And I'm just like, God, it'd be nice if there was like some outside voices that were sort of, you know, they weren't trying to be so tippy-tongue about anything.
I'll say it for you. Pretentious, that's the word I'm going to use.
completely pretentious, yeah. Just so pretentious, and yeah.
Thanks, man. We're definitely trying. I'm not working with Bruce Willis, though, so that's really not nearly as impressive as this is.
Hey, man, do what you got to do.
Although, if I had him still, I'd send you the tapes from Bruno so you could... You could play him the next time you see him.
I'm going to Google him later. I'm just going to listen to some of mine if I want to, but I'm curious to see. I know he did tell me he plays like the harmonica and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Oh, man. I didn't know he had like actual records.
Yeah, no, it was great. And maybe it's because I'm, you know, I was an 80s child, I was a young kid in the 80s. So I grew up with that. But yeah, he had a big album. I mean, I think he had two or three, but the first one was really the big one. I think it was The Return of Bruno, and the whole, it was like this mystery persona that he had.
It's called Bruno?
The Return of Bruno, I think was the album title. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Check it out. Well, you're always welcome back. So the next movie you want to come back, please do. You're always welcome back.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks. And I appreciate all the support, and hope you guys keep doing what you're doing, man. Keep coming up with like an original take on everything. I love that. How you guys just have your own unique, distinct take on everything. So keep doing that.
We'll keep trying as long as people are listening. There's no theaters open. It makes it a little harder right now, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. I feel you. Goodbye. And hope to hear from you guys, and Survive the Night will be out starting May 22nd. Should be on all streaming platforms.
Thanks again, Matt, for calling in and doing that. I know it's hard when you're trying to live remote, and he's working remote. He's doing everything. We're all doing everything remote, but he's a wonderful guy. I can't tell you how much I appreciate him stopping by. I can't really sugarcoat how nice a guy he is. The last time we had an interview, he had mentioned that he took a class with Alfred Hitchcock, and he was given this watch from Hitchcock's daughter, and all the classmates were. And I told him what an avid Hitchcock fan I am. I mean, I do Presenting Hitchcock, which is a Hitchcock podcast where we just talk about Hitchcock films. I love Alfred Hitchcock. And he was nice enough to send me that watch. I don't know if he wants me telling this story or not. He's never asked me not to, and he's never asked me to. But I'm telling you, so you know what a good guy he is. He sent me this watch out of the kindness of his own heart, just randomly, just sent me this watch. I still have it. I love it. It's a beautiful collectible for me personally, and a great memory from doing this podcast all these years. To have somebody that doesn't need to do something like that, to do that for somebody that they really don't know, just meant the world to me. Just really greatly appreciate it. He's a great guy. Hope you guys really enjoyed that interview. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember, Survive the Night is available on all digital platforms right now. It's streaming now, so be sure to check that out. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever your podcast app of choice is. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com otherwise. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch Survive the Night, buy popcorn.